Speaking on this program is Bill Boyd.
Psalm 125, and we'll go through that verse by verse. But before we do, I want to talk to some of the young men here. We've got several. Do you all ever play forward? Have you ever done that? Some of the men in here did that. I know I did when I was growing up. We'd play forward. We often did it outside. When it was bad weather, we'd turn the dining room chairs over and throw blankets over and put World Book encyclopedias on them and climb up under there, and that'd be our fort. Now, we'd go outside and we'd play fort. We'd have places in the woods and places in the fields, and we had different places where we had our forts. Man, we had so much fun playing fort, and usually we had imaginary enemies. I mean, they could be anything from the Apache Indians to the space aliens coming at us, but we'd have all kind of enemies that would try to attack our fort, and we'd defend the fort. That was a fun thing to play. I don't know how many little girls do that. The little boys, we just used to love to play fort. Now, sometimes, here's what we would do. We'd go out and gather up acorns, and then we'd go attack one another at each other's forts and throw acorns at each other. And sometimes we'd hit each other, and that didn't feel too good. But usually you could duck down behind that fort, and it was always harder to attack a fort than it was to defend a fort. To understand Psalm 125, I want you to understand this. Jerusalem was not just a city. And Jerusalem was not just a place where the temple was. Jerusalem was a fort. And let me tell you why it was so important that there was a fort there. Between that river, between that plain, there would be these hills. If you wanted a fort, that's where you'd put one. You'd want to put it in those hills. Because you could be safe in those hills. Most of the travel would go on either side and you'd have access to it. But you could build a fort in a high place in those hills and you could be safe. And that's where Jerusalem was. Jerusalem was actually on four hills that sort of connected with one another. One of those hills was named Zion. And sometime the whole city would just be called Zion. So sometime when you read Zion, you have to know, is it talking about that particular spot or maybe just the whole city that was there? But Zion would be one of those places. And that place was occupied by the Jebusites. And when Joshua came in to take the land, the king of Jerusalem, who was a Jebusite, got the armies up together to fight Joshua's army. And they didn't fight him at Jerusalem. They went out against the Israelites. And you know they killed that king along with a lot of the others. And they actually took the city. But they didn't keep it. Evidently, the Jebusites reoccupied that city. You've got your Bibles. You might want to look at Judges chapter 1 and verse 8. And it says in the book of Judges chapter 1 and verse 8, "Now the children of Judah had fought against Jerusalem and taken it and smitten it with the edge of the sword and burned the city with fire." So they had it, but not forever. In Joshua 15 and verse 63, it says, "As for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the children of Judah could not drive them out, but the Jebusites dwell with the children of Judah at Jerusalem unto this day." So evidently they had the city, but they lost it back to the Jebusites. They reoccupied it. So there they were. And this was a stronghold. This was a good place for a fort. They could fortify themselves and they could defend themselves against the Israelites who could have taken the city if they'd been doing God's will, but they didn't. And so those Jebusites stayed in Jerusalem. Listen, they stayed there for 500 years. They stayed in that fort in Jerusalem. Now, after Saul died, David became king. For 7 years, his fort was further south down here. He had a fort down there in Hebron. And he only ruled over the southern part of Israel, the southern part of that land. But after the son of Saul died, David became the king of all of Israel. He wanted his fort more in the center of the country, just way down there on the south side. He wanted it more in the center side. And what would be a better place than that place? Well, if I could get that city away from the Jebusites, they'd been there 500 years. That would be a stronghold for me. But that was a difficult city to take. I want to read you two stories about how David was able to take that city. The first one's found in 2 Samuel chapter 5. I'm going to be again reading in verse 6. It says, "And the king and his men went to Jerusalem against the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, which spake unto David, saying, Except thou take away the blind and the lame, thou shalt not come in hither, thinking David cannot come in hither. Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, the same as the city of David. And David said on that day, Whosoever getteth up to the gutter and smiteth the Jebusites and the lame or the blind that are hated of David's soul, he shall be chief and captain. Wherefore they said, The blind and the lame shall not come into the house. So David dwelt in the fort and called it the city of David. And David built round about it from Milo and inward. And David went on and grew great, and the Lord of hosts was with him." You want to take your city? You're going to have to go up the gutter. Go up the gutter and take the city. What does that mean? Let's look at another account. 1 Chronicles chapter 11, verses 4 through 9. Now, it's the same story, but it tells us something different. "And David and all Israel went to Jerusalem, which is Jebus, where the Jebusites were, the inhabitants of the land. And the inhabitants of Jebus said to David, Thou shalt not come in thither. Nevertheless, David took the castle of Zion, which is the city of David. And David said, Whosoever smiteth the Jebusites first shall be chief and captain. So Joab, the son of Zeruiah, went up first and was chief, and David dwelt in the castle. Therefore they called it the city of David. And he built a round about it, even from Milo round about, and Joab repaired the rest of the city. So David waxed greater and greater, for the Lord of hosts is with him." Here's what happened. They came up to that city of Jerusalem. There was that fort. And they said something about the blind and the lame. I'm not sure what they're talking about, and I'm not the only one. There are two possibilities. One is there was maybe a superstition that if you put the blind and the lame around the city, that it would be bad luck to attack. Now, that's what some have said. Maybe that's what that's talking about. Another idea about that blind and the lame was he's just making fun of them. Those Jebusites are in there and says, "You couldn't come in here if we were blind and lame. We're so strong, fortified." Or maybe they're saying, "We can beat you. You try to come in, we can beat you just like you were blind and lame." Calling them names. You ever call one another names? That's sort of what they do. Just calling them names. They were so confident that they could hold that city that they were calling them names. Well, David's looking, how are we going to take this fort? What are we going to do? He looked around and he saw a passageway into that fort. Now here it's called the gutter. What's that talking about? In 1867, there was an English explorer called Charles Warren. Charles Warren was over there around Jerusalem looking around, and down at the bottom of the hill, see, Jerusalem's built up on a hill, and down at the bottom of the hill there was a spring. Now, if you wanted to take a fort, one thing you would do, you'd surround the fort and wouldn't let anybody have any food or water. They finally got hungry enough. They said, "We give up. We're so hungry, or we're so thirsty. We just give up." And that's how you'd take the fort. That didn't happen in Jerusalem. They had water. Where were they getting their water? Well, there was a spring down at the bottom of the hill. The spring of Gihon in the Kidron Valley. Here's what happened. They knew if they got out the city and went down to that spring, they'd get captured. So they dug a tunnel. And that spring, they dug a tunnel back up under the mountain. And Warren found that tunnel. He's looking in that spring and he saw that hole and he said, "Hey, this looks like a tunnel." He crawled down into that tunnel and he crawled up and it went up under the wall of the city. And then there was a vertical shaft 55 feet high that went up to where the city was. And they climbed up that shaft and he came out in the city. And to this day, people think that must have been that gutter that David was talking about. They call that Warren's Shaft. That's different than Hezekiah's tunnel. We'll tell you about that later sometime. But that was Warren's Shaft. And David saw that. And so who's going to go up that shaft and take this city? They were so confident they probably weren't guarding that shaft. They thought, well, nobody can do that. And they didn't count on Joab. I tell you, Joab was actually David's cousin. And he was a fighting boy. He was the kind of cousin you'd want on your side in a big scrap. So he got his cousin out there, and cousin Joab says, I can do this. So he got his army together, and they went in that tunnel, and they climbed up that shaft, and they surprised those Jebusites, and they took that city, and it became the city of David. It was David's fort now. David made a stronghold, a fort. He called it a castle. And that's where David was safe and secure. When all the things were going around, David could go into this city and he could protect himself and he could get his army and go in and out of that city. And the sons of David that became the kings for 400 years were able to stay in that fort and protect themselves from all the commotions and enemies that were going out. It was only until Nebuchadnezzar came, when Israel was very weak, when they turned away from God, and Nebuchadnezzar's army was very strong, was able to finally overwhelm them and actually take Jerusalem up for 400 years. That was their fort. And they protected themselves in that fort. Now let's go to the 125th Psalm. That helps us understand what this is talking about when it says, they that trust in the Lord shall be as Mount Zion, which cannot be removed, but abideth forever. You see, they knew they were safe and secure on Zion. You trust in the Lord, you can be safe and secure. It's nice to be safe. It's nice to be secure. You know how terrible it feels when you don't feel safe? We want to be physically safe. We want to be financially secure. But when a storm comes up, we want to be in a safe place. But of all the different kind of safety and security there is, the most important is spiritual security. And this psalm is making an analogy between the physical security that they had on Mount Zion and the spiritual security we have in the Lord. Now that mountain, say, but it's been taken. You know, it's been taken, and cities have been built and removed and built and removed and built and removed. In fact, it said when the Roman army came on Jerusalem, either after the New Testament was written, there wasn't one stone left on another. But Zion was still there, and it's there to this day. That mountain is still there. And we're not just as secure as the things they built on the mountain. We're as secure as the mountain itself in the Lord. They that trust in the Lord will be as secure as Mount Zion, which abideth forever. And then look at verse 2. Is the mountains are round about Jerusalem, so the Lord is round about His people from henceforth and forever. You could stand on Mount Zion and look around. And there's deep valleys on the sides. And then beyond those valleys, there are other hills. And it's just hard to get an army in there. And those hills give you protection from those armies that would be making those traveling through those different nations and cities and things along either side. They didn't want to get up in those hills. That was too hard work. So the hills would provide protection. So you stand there on one hill where you're safe, and you look at all the hills around you that are protecting you, and that's what it's like to have spiritual security in the Lord. It says, the mountains round about, so is the Lord round about His people from henceforth and forever. And then in verse 3, for the rod of the wicked shall not rest on the righteous, lest the righteous put forth their hands to iniquity. That rod, some say, well, that's the chastening rod. They're going to beat you, and they won't beat you very long. Well, maybe. Some of them say, no, that's a surveyor's rod. They're going to survey that out and decide their lot, and they're not going to be able to survey and claim that. Well, maybe so. But I think the correct translation is that rod is as a scepter. That's the ruling rod. You just stay with the Lord. And the wicked will never be able to rule you in such a way that you can't do what's right. You're not going to turn to iniquity if you're safe in the Lord. And the wicked may show forth their power, but they'll never have power over you to force you to do things that are wrong. The Bible promises God makes a way of escape, that we can endure the trials of this life. We've got that security. We've got that protection. Someone says, well, I don't know if I can live right. You can live right. The Lord's going to see to it that you can. And you trust in the Lord, and the wicked cannot force you to do what's wrong. So you're safe in the Lord. Look what it says in the next verse. It's a prayer. Do good, O Lord, to them that are good. Now the word good is used two different ways there. Do good, that means be beneficial. Provide benefit and blessing to those who are what? Who are morally good. Those who try to do what's right, Lord, help those. Be with those that are trying to do what's right. David could pray that prayer with a confidence that that's what God would do, because that's what he said he would do. Do good to those that are good and to them that are upright in their hearts. You know, it's not enough just to try to look good on the outside. You've got to be good on the inside. And you might fool people, but you won't fool the Lord. He knows your heart. And so you've got to be good from the heart and be upright. What do you think of being upright? That means standing firm, standing tall, standing straight, and not ashamed. You be good from your heart, fellas, from the inside. The Lord will take care of the things on the outside. He'll protect you. You can do what's right. And then it says down here, as for such as turn aside into their crooked ways, the Lord shall lead them forth with workers of iniquity. In your mind, I want you to stand on that hill in Zion now. Imagine you're standing there and you're looking around, and there are the hills all around that provide you protection. And now look at the ways that come in and out of Zion. Well, they snake up through those valleys. That's those little crooked ways that wiggle through those valleys coming up to the city. You get off of Mount Zion, you're going downhill, and you're going down these crooked paths. The crooked paths of the wicked. Why are they crooked? Because they're always trying to find the easy way. It's because the rules are always changing. There's nothing steady. They're just always going back. They'll go this way a while, then they got to turn back this way a while, then they turn around, and that way there's no sense of sure direction. How different those crooked ways and those upright in heart. Do you see that big difference going on in this psalm? You trust in the Lord. You stop trusting in the Lord. What are you going to do? You're going to find yourself walking down these crooked ways, getting further and further from the safety of the Lord. And then led away like the workers of iniquity. You know, Nebuchadnezzar did go into Judea and finally into Jerusalem. He actually led people away into Babylon as captives. You think you can dally with sin? You stop trusting in the Lord and the devil will take you and lead you away. Against your own will, you'll be like a slave to Satan, being led away down these crooked paths. Well, it's just a whole lot better to just stay in Zion, isn't it? Where you're safe. You're safe in the fort. Stick with God. Do what's right. When you're trusting in the Lord and you're doing what nobody can force you to do what's wrong. Now, you might choose to leave. The Lord says, I'll take care of you in Zion. Now, He doesn't make you stay there. You might decide, I'll take these crooked paths. But it'll be to your own doom. But you can also decide to just stay with the Lord. He will protect you. There's several passages about that. You just think about Noah. You know, he went in the ark. That's where he was safe. He was outside of the ark where all the problem was. You look at Paul on his voyage to Rome. They were all worried about their lives. The Holy Spirit came to Paul and says, don't worry, you're all going to be saved. And Paul believed him. But later, some of them were going to leave the ship. And Paul said, except ye abide in the ship, ye cannot be saved. Well, no, the Lord promised to save them. But His own condition, they stayed in the ship. The Lord's promised us security. But we got to stay on Zion. We got to stick with the mountain. We got to stay in the fort. And if we don't, then don't expect God to protect you if you're going to go out here and live in those crooked ways. Just stay in the fort. Let me read to you these words of comfort. The book of Romans, chapter 8, beginning in verse 31. What shall we say to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? He spared not His own Son, but delivered Him up for us all. How shall He not with Him also freely give us all things? Who shall lay anything to the charge of God's elect? It's God that justifieth. Who is he that condemneth? It is Christ that died, yea, there is risen again, who is even at the right hand of God, maketh intercession for us. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, or distress, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or sword, as it is written, we're killed all day long and accounted as sheep for the slaughter? No. In all these things we're more than conquerors for Him that loved us. For I'm persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God which is in Christ Jesus. That's the security we have in spiritual Zion. And that's His church. You want to be saved spiritually? You need to abide in the church. You need to get in the ship. You need to get in the right boat. You need to get on Zion. That means you need to be a member of God's church. Look at this. Hebrews chapter 12. Speaking spiritually of these things, in a similar analogy, in verse 22, you are come to Mount Zion. What's he talking about? The physical mountain? No, listen. You are come to Mount Zion, unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn, which are written in heaven, and the God, the judge of all, and the spirits of just men made perfect, and Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and the blood of sprinkling that speaketh of better things than that of Abel. See that you refuse not him that speaketh. For if they escape not who refuseth him that speaketh on earth, much more shall we escape if we turn from him that speaketh from heaven, whose voice then shook the earth, for he's now promised, saying, yet much more I'll shake not only the earth only, but also heaven. And yet this word once more signifieth the removal of those things that are shaken as of things that are made, but those things which cannot be shaken remain. Wherefore, we receiving a kingdom that cannot be moved, let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear, for our God's a consuming fire. You become a member of the church. You're in a kingdom that cannot be moved. You're standing on Zion that abideth forever. You trust in the Lord. And He'll protect you from everything that could keep you out of heaven. When we're living a Christian life, we're playing fort. But it's not just play. This is more important than any military base. Stand secure as you trust in the Lord, knowing that He's with you. And nothing can happen in this world to steal us out of His hand. You might choose to walk away in a crooked way, but that's your fault. God's going to do His part. You can stick with God and be saved. I want you to get in that fort. We need that safety. We need to be baptized into Christ and added to His church where we are saved.